Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, it's that time. It's Wednesday, October 7th, 8 p.m. It is the K. Thompson Live Show. I am the son, also known as Eric Payne. And my mom, K. Thompson, is on vacation because she has her birthday coming up and we wanted her to have a nice vacation. So I'm at the helm tonight, me and Mr. Wayne Gilman, when he calls in. And just some things I wanted to talk about, you know. You know how I like to always talk about the news and what's going on and the politics and things like that. And if you're anything like me, if you're a political junkie and you watch the TV all the time over and over again, you end up yelling at the TV a little bit because the people just don't really like to tell the truth a lot of times. A lot of them flat out lie, a lot of these politicians. And it's really unbelievable the extent to which they're willing to go for power and things like that. And some of these people are bold-faced lie. You know, I want to talk about when I think about someone lying, just like in front of everybody, there's one particular politician. I'm sure he's probably not different than anybody else, but one particular Republican guy in particular that comes to mind named Jason Chaffetz. And if you can remember, most recently he's challenging the current front runner for Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, I think his name is. And Chaffetz is an interesting guy because of they characterized his name, I think it's called being Chaffetzed. And that is something that they characterize in political circles, people that know him, of him turning on people. He turns on people who at one time were his mentors or one time were instrumental in helping him rise up the ranks, and he has a tendency to kind of sell them out when it becomes expedient for him to do so and when it becomes possible that he might, in fact, gain from that. And you can see what he just did recently. If you've been paying attention to the news within the last week, how he had treated Kevin McCarthy, saying at one time he wanted the Speaker of the House and knew how to talk, and now this week he just really kind of toned back his rhetoric about Kevin McCarthy. I saw him on a show, I think it was yesterday, where he was speaking about him in glowing terms, and which was quite a, like I said, a shift from last week when he was a little bit upset at Kevin McCarthy for letting the cat out the bag that the committee on Benghazi was basically put in place to discredit Hillary Clinton and try to hurt her chances of running for president. You know, it's kind of fun to me to see these guys go after each other. Boy, wow, these Republicans, I just feel sorry for each other, sorry for them as they just kind of turn on each other and go after each other. It's hilarious. But the thing that's not hilarious is that who's getting caught in that is that the taxpayer. You know, when they have these committees, they cost money. And I think the last Benghazi committee, I don't know, I heard a figure of $24 million, the investigation and all the stuff. I don't know for sure. I know that it costs a lot of money when they shut down the government the last time, and they're just threatening to do that again about because of Planned Parenthood this time. So they seem to not really have any problem putting the average person who goes to work every day, who's got to watch his budget, and these guys seem to have no problem being willing to shut down services that people use every day and hurting the average person to get their own way. Pretty much. And it's really unbelievable. I was trying to pull up something in particular, and I'm wondering why none of the press and the media is talking about when Jason Chaffetz was, when they had the woman at the committee hearing Cecile Richards, I believe her, is Planned Parenthood, CEO of Planned Parenthood, was testified before this committee. And you could just see all these males really kind of going in on her aggressively, kind of attacking her a little bit, or her stance of what she represents. I guess that's what they have issue with, even though they come off very trying to put words in people's mouths and things like that. But that's what they do. They bully people a lot of times. And then you see Jason Chaffetz put this diagram up on the wall, have it projected on the wall, and talking about this is your numbers of Planned Parenthood and why these numbers have gone up and their abortions, why certain services have gone down and the abortion number of abortions have gone up. And it was a graph that was really kind of confusing, and she had never seen it before, and he was grandstanding. So you've never seen this? I've got this so-and-so. And just as he was getting ready to say it, and if you go back and watch this tape, because you can see this man getting ready to boldface a lie. And Cecile Richards says, he leans back, and you watch the tape, you see a gentleman lean forward and whisper something to her ear. And she's saying all the while, I don't recognize this diagram. It's not part of the information that we provided with. Maybe if you give me a second to look at it, I can see what it's from. And somebody who needs to get a raise on her side, noticed that this diagram was put up there, was presented, and the information in this diagram was presented by a group that is an anti-abortion group, a known anti-abortion group. You know, they try to have these very innocuous sounding names, Americans for Saving Life, Americans for Health, whatever. But it was a known anti-abortion group. Not only that, it wasn't even something that the person, you know, when I first heard it, and Cecile Richards said, oh, excuse me, Congressman, this is this diagram was presented and put together, this information was put together by this organization, which is a known anti-abortion group, and they're kind of biased. And dude was just getting ready to say, before she said that, Jason Chaffetz, who had the diagram of grandstand, was just getting ready to say, as he was saying, you don't recognize this diagram? I got it from, and then she said, excuse me, because she was told the information. This diagram, this information was gotten from so-and-so group that was anti-abortion and anti-Planned Parenthood. And dude was just ready to say, he was saying, actually, I got this from your files or your research material. And it wasn't as audible, but he got caught in a bold-faced lie of trying to misrepresent the information, really trying to misrepresent it, and claim that he got it from their information about Planned Parenthood, when in fact he got it from this group. And the kicker is really that the diagram, you know, how it has a source when people do the work, and it has a source right in the lower right corner? Well, that's where the person got the information. They weren't a crack attorney. It was right up there on the wall when Chaffetz and his people had it projected on the wall. It says source and the name of this group. So regardless of the guy getting ready to lie, and if you watch his reaction afterwards, when she says that, he said, oh, well, we'll have to look into where the information went, and his hand is kind of shaking because he's trying to turn his microphone off. It's really hilarious because this guy gets caught in a bold-faced lie, and he turns to his Democratic counterpart, who is Congressman Elijah Cummings, and says, I believe you have 6 minutes coming to you. And he's nervous. He's trying to fumble and turn off his microphone. You can see the hands shaking a little bit because he just got caught trying to present a bold-faced lie on national TV to the American public. And he tells Cummings and said, Congressman, I believe you have 6 minutes. And Cummings says, no, I have seven. And Chaffetz says, whatever, just start talking. You know, his vibe was like, start talking now and get me off the hook. But this guy was getting ready to have just a flat-out lie, claim he got that information, the source of that information, was from Planned Parenthood when it was not. And if you go back and watch the entire footage of this particular portion or watch the whole hearing, you will see that this guy who now wants to be Speaker of the House was getting ready to present, was going to lie to get this information out and act as if it was something that came out of Planned Parenthood resources when in fact did not. And this is the gentleman, this is the guy who wants to be Speaker of the House now. This is the person who time and time again, even his colleagues have said that he kind of stabbed them in the back. And it's just an example of what these guys are willing to do, what they're willing to do to get their point across. I don't know what their point is to lie about the facts in America, But they play to a very fringe group in the Republican Party, a very thin fringe group that seems to be the loudest, the most unreasonable, and these guys play to that. And people like J.C. Chaffetz and some of the other people out of that committee, that's exactly what they do. So I'm really surprised that no other media outlets really picked up on this, that this guy was getting ready to present this, was really presenting it as if it was factual information provided by Planned Parenthood when it was not. And he knew that, and he got called out on it because his people, whoever put that up there, were not smart enough to say, to realize that this person, the group that provided the research material for that diagram, was sourced right on the bottom of the diagram. It was really kind of funny. It really makes you wonder that this guy's not sharp enough to cheat, right? why do we really want him to have the job that he wants? So I'm getting a little trouble with my mouth. So Wayne, you're on, I'm trying to switch over there to that other screen that I can contact you. And I'm having a little bit of trouble, so just bear with me. Here we go, Wayne Gilman, come on into this conversation, Wayne. There you go.
Hey, good evening, Eric and Kay. How's everyone?
Well, we're doing good. I can hear you. Can hear me well?
Yeah, I hear you. Excellent. I'm glad you spoke about Chaffetz a moment ago. I didn't get a chance to see what was going on because I tuned in at the tail end of that little incident you just described. But there's an arrogance about that guy that just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know what it is. I mean, I've seen people like him before, and I know that he's vying for a very powerful seat. But there's I saw him one-on-one on a Fox interview recently, and he made my blood boil.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I have the exact same feeling about him. He is arrogant, he's condescending, and also,
yeah,
you know, a lot of times he's on the wrong side of things. And when you're willing to, you know, make stuff up for political points, you, regardless of what side you are on an issue, when you're willing to fabricate the facts, that's just underhanded, and that's kind of cheating. And it's not kind of
right.
Cheating, in my
mm-hmm.
opinion. And I'm really surprised that none of the media picked it up. Nobody said, wow, this guy, he was getting ready to lie. Did you hear that? He just lied and wanted to present it as if this was information from Planned Parenthood, when in fact it wasn't. And if you look at him, his whole vibe was totally shook, because before that he was going on, he was on his soapbox, and he was rolling, boy, and then he got stumbled up by somebody just being observant, and it's unbelievable. And now, you know, a week or two later, how he sold out Kevin McCarthy after Kevin McCarthy cat out the bag about what they're trying to do to Hillary Clinton with that Benghazi committee. And
he,
you know,
blew himself up with that.
Yeah, he blew himself up, but Chaffetz immediately jumped on him, said, you know, he wanted a speaker who could speak, and, you know, was really down on the guy. That was last week. And just yesterday, as I said earlier, he was talking about Kevin McCarthy being a great guy. So, but he just wants to be speaker too. So this is the type of leadership that could potentially take over the Republican Party. It's scary because these people aren't even, they don't even want to compromise, man. And
not to cut you off, but I think the thing that really is bothersome about it is that once you see what's already in the House and the Senate with respect to that conservative element, pose that against the candidates who are running, you know,
right,
and seem to be taking the lead. You know, again, we still, you know, I'd like to think the whole thing with Trump would fizzle, but it seems like as if he's in it for the long haul. You know, I mean, he didn't anticipate staying in it. I'm certain in his heart of hearts, he didn't think he would be in this long, you know. And then you have the Ben Carson element there. And I'm still trying to understand how he wades in and seems to resonate with a certain element out there within the Republican ranks. But, you know, it seems like those two are basically carrying the ball for the entire party. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of the Republican campaign. You don't hear about Bush anymore. And every once in a while you hear about Rubio, but it's Ben Carson and Trump. And then you have the really, I mean, it was just so sophomoric the way Chavis behaved. You know, it just it gets me. I'm glad that you were able to really eloquently expound on what was going on there. And poor Cummings was caught in the fray, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think Elijah was caught in there. I think that when he just calmly said it seemed like he was just standing back and letting them sink themselves. You know, because
yeah.
He just calmly said, "Well, I have 7 minutes." If you want, Chavis is so shook, he's like, "Well, whatever, just start talking." You know, that's what he's kind of the expression on his face is saying that. It's unbelievable, and it's good that you talked about the their candidates in the race. Donald Trump is, I don't think he's an opportunist, so he's going to ride it out as far as it can go. So, you know, I agree with you, probably didn't think it would go that far, but now that it is, he's like, hey, let's see if we can take it all the way. I mean, there's nothing else that, you know, you rarely meet a rich guy that's not an opportunist. So the one thing is going to be funny because, you know, he does know that he's going to be working for somebody. He's going to be working for the American public, as quiet as it's kept, as much as the job seems like when it comes to Republicans, that they're not working for somebody. And
right.
Donald Trump is an entity unto himself. I think that I believe that people that live in our area, the New York City area, really, they recognize trash talking when they hear it. And the majority of people here know that Donald Trump is like, hey, he's talking trash, you know. I mean, he says stuff. He says these things that everybody's thinking, first off, these kind of human nature things that are kind of petty.
Right.
Be things that we like. That's why reality TV has taken off in America. And he gives a slice of that reality TV. You know, he gossips within the course of his speech. He'll let out these tidbits of gossip and reality show type of talking. You know, like, I'm so good. I spoke to Marco Rubio and he called me up. And, you know, that behind the scenes thing that we are so, people that are so enthralled with, that whole kind of the mystique about celebrity. And that kind of gossip that we thrive on. So he throws a little bit of that out, which catches people. Then he says the most incendiary things, which catches the most extreme people. And they kind of, and also the worship of money in the United States. We're a capitalist society, so
right.
How do you worship the rich? You know, so him talking about his riches maybe perhaps doesn't get to some people as much as it does to people that are kind of used to hearing Donald Trump talking to Donald Trump stuff. And we're like, yeah, whatever, man, get out of here. You know, but everybody else seems to be really just taking him very seriously, which is kind of funny. One thing I'll say about Donald Trump, he is the Muhammad Ali, he's the Cassius Clay of politicians, because he's a trash talking, keep moving, whatever. And I mean, you know, they asked him, Hillary Clinton sent a copy of her book to all of them, all the Republican candidates, you know, that was in the news a little bit too, and they asked Trump about it. He said, they asked Trump, did you get the book Senator Clinton sent all you guys? He's like, I didn't check the mail. So just stuff like that. I'm like, this dude is the trash talking of all the politicians. I would give him that, man. And Uncle Ben, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. And the thing is, and I think you're absolutely right to refer to Carson as Uncle Ben. But, you know, there's just so much of Trump that you could tolerate, and I can't see why the rest of the American society cannot see the lack of substance in this guy. You know, I mean, the deal is that he is a celebrity, and he was a celebrity, but even during his heyday, you know, with all the media hype, and even prior to him having his TV show, you know, all the little political incidents that he used to get involved locally here in New York, you know, when it came to stop and frisk and the Central Park jogger case and all the other little incidents that he seemed to weave his web into, you still see the lack of substance. And I just don't understand, you know, what's going on now. I think he's got some campaigners, and I think his daughter is very politically astute. I watch her, and I hear her periodically during certain talk shows, and she seems to have a head on her shoulders. And I think what they're going to try to do is reinvent him to show that he does have a certain amount of substance, that they're, you know, that he's up to speed with certain political issues, if it should just go in his direction. But for him to sit there and debate people like a Hillary Clinton or the even the late Senator Lloyd Benson, you know, who made a fool of the vice president, the Republican vice president at the time. I can't think of his name. He was under Bush, a one-timer. You know, it Quayle. You know, it's just it just fascinates me that he thinks that trash talking is going to elevate his status when it comes to debating the issues.
Well, I mean, it is fascinating, but you know, we're in a culture of celebrity. You know, more people recognize celebrities than, you know, will recognize a picture of a celebrity than they would the vice president or the secretary of state or the attorney general. And you know, yeah, I mean, all I got to do is watch sometimes with Jimmy Kimmel or when Jay Leno, these guys used to be out on the street, show pictures of the prominent people in America, and the average person on the street has no idea who's who. You know,
yeah,
and
that's true.
And I mean, unfortunately, I think that the further out you get, there's a lack of sophistication, a lack of, you know, this whole kind of, you know, like I said, celebrity. He's rich. He talks this trash. You know, I'm like you. I can only listen to him for like ten minutes at top at the most. You know, because you start hearing this guy brag on himself so much, and I'm like, don't they hear this guy talk? He's just talking trash. I mean, I don't get it either. And I think that we're kind of used to it or Teflon to it because he has an East Coast energy, a trash talking energy, a New York City vibe, and also people have been, we've been used to Donald Trump for a number of years. So a particular area are kind of immune to him a little bit. But it is scary that the Republican, I mean, listen, I don't know why we're flipping out so much. These are the same people that brought us Sarah Palin and thought it was all right for her to be
exactly.
Vice President. So,
but,
you know, the average American is not really the most.
No, you're right, Eric. I mean, but the sad part about it, not to cut you off, is that they do have a constituency. And if given an opportunity, let's say the Democrats decide to sit this one out thinking that their standard bearer would be the foregone conclusion in terms of a president. And, you know, we've been known to do that. I mean, I think the one thing that motivated the populace in terms of the previous two elections is the fact that we had the Muhammad Ali going against, you know, the Great White Hope, you know?
Right.
If I could use that imagery. But
right.
The thing is now, you know, clearly the only person of color involved in this contest would be Carson. And I can't seem to get a read on him, but I do sense that whole Uncle Ben phenomenon, you know, not to, you know, get derogatory. But, I mean, the deal is it is what it is. And the fact that, you know, again, after all these years, there is such a need for progressive talk in this country. I was riding around today and I was canvassing some of the talk stations and I found myself on WWDJ out there in Jersey and I forgot who the host was, but apparently he had a black caller from Kentucky and he was complaining that, you know, in Kentucky there are no stations that address the issues of liberal politics at all and that, you know, unless you could afford to pay for certain satellite programming, you're not going to get it at all. And the host had to agree, and he was a conservative, admittedly a conservative Republican, that conservatives rule the roost in terms of giving information. But he turned around and sort of made this comparison between Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon and Colbert as being the balance, and I'm just saying those guys are running an entertainment program. And if you could see between the lines with what they're doing, maybe you get a sense that maybe they might be pro-liberal or pro-democratic. But, you know, the average person who's watching this, you just pointed out just a moment ago, there are a lot of people who don't know what's going on, and they just hear a couple of one-liners and zings, and they think that's it. And I think that's the problem. I mean, there's no balance in this country.
Well, yeah. You have people listening to people that reinforce their attitudes that they have already, and they don't want to hear anything new. And usually what happens when you don't want to hear anything new, that means you want to keep things the way they are. So when you want to keep things the way they are, mean or take it back to what it was, or take use things that you use phrases like take back, let's make it great again. You know, all these things suggest that, you know, you somehow your existence is not what it once was, and you want to go back to the way it was, where black people were second class citizens, we didn't have a black president, where, you know, all this kind of stuff on the surface is happening, but a lot of these people who support these very conservative, extreme right policies are of themselves middle class people, working class people. They're not the very wealthy, but they are preyed upon by the lowest common denominator: their fear, their prejudice, their racism.
Right.
You know, their feeling that, you know, they're missing out. It's not that they're missing out. It's just that they don't have preferred citizenship anymore. There's not a hierarchy. Mm. There's, you know, America's citizenship is leveling out. It's not, well, we're the first class citizens and everybody else is second class. And maybe that's what the majority of white Americans or some of these ones that are at least clinging on to these groups are feeling, that they're losing their preferred citizen status or the first citizenship. And as America becomes browner, becomes more even in terms of its dealing, we have to start dealing with issues that concern all people. These people who once held the power, if by the very notion of them being a certain ethnic persuasion, gave them preference over everybody else, and now that's not the case anymore. So let's take our country back. Let's make our country great again. Let's go back to when we were on top and everybody else was underneath our foot. That's basically what that's saying. And so that's what these individuals are playing for. And in that, people of color fit a certain role, have a certain role to play. And that is the role where you support the status quo. That's why Ben Carson, Marco Rubio, they support the status quo. They're not shaking anything up. Ben Carson is a black guy who's basically saying a lot of the things that they say, who plays down the effects of oppression that Africans have caught in this country since the beginning here. So when you have, it's like when you have those people who, I'm going to make it anyway, I'm going to make it, pull me up by my bootstraps, I'll make it, and those individuals do make it, and then they act like, well, if I made it, everybody else can make it, so I'm not going to throw a ladder back down and lift somebody up, you know, and that's where, that's where I think the problem gets, because then you have a lot of white individuals say, yeah, this guy made it, how come everybody else can't make it? And they negate the systematic things that are in place in the society to keep people down. And just because one person makes it doesn't mean that everybody else is going to have the same exact circumstance or experience. And for him to kind of toe the line, which is what a lot of these black Republicans do, they toe the line for a party that pretty much is against the majority of their ethnic group and pretty much puts things in place to keep hold their ethnic group down or oppressed. And for an individual like Ben Carson to come off so condescending, you know, I'm wondering if he has like that, some doctors get that God complex. And it's just his whole vibe is like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like this, his recent comments about, I wouldn't let the guy shoot me, and I would have, you don't know what you would have done because you weren't there. And to say that, after these people lost their lives is idiotic. You're talking about what we would have done. And on the news this morning, he's talking about, well, I want to begin to plant a seed that people should start thinking about things differently. Uncle Ben, the only thing you're planting in people's minds is that you're kind of nutty. That's the only seed you're planting in people's minds. Because he says this stuff, and to be so, you know, Obamacare is like slavery, and say all this, and he's another one that kind of, he has a little bit of a condescending nature to him. If you see him how he talks and answers questions.
Oh, yeah, there's an arrogance, you know, no question about that. I agree with you 1,000%. I mean, it's unfortunate that he has that demeanor, and especially after seeing, you know, what has come out of Obama. You know, I'm not saying the man is perfect, but I think if anyone who's done great things to heal this country, regardless of political affiliation, you can't say that there's, I think when history looks back at the last 8 years and see what Obama has done, you know, it's going to be just something phenomenal, you know, because we came out of a very, very dark situation with Bush. There was a war going on, and it was still going on when he was elected as president. And then the economy, you know, it was almost a virtual depression, you know. I mean, they called it a recession, but particularly those living in our communities, you know, had the hardest time trying to find work or trying to, you know, scuffle and make a living and support our families. And, you know, when you see, and I'm not saying that it's perfect now, there's a reason why the national interest rate is still at where it is. You know, I mean, there are no signs of inflation, but still, the fact of the matter is we haven't made a complete recovery. There's many of us still out here trying to figure out what's going to happen next. But the bottom line is we're in far better shape than we were when he took over the White House. And that's why, you know, again, you know, you're absolutely right, Eric. Arrogance on Carson's part. Here's a guy who benefited from the civil rights movement, admitted that he was at one time a Democrat, and just decided to change his tune when he thought it was politically expedient for him to say, well, you know, and I understand that anger. I mean, some of it, you know, some of what I hear out of him, I used to hear from the Nation of Islam. You know, we should be self-employed and develop our own communities. I'm not saying that we should be separatists, but the bottom line is that, you know, there are a lot of people out here who are dependent on that handout. It is what you do with it. And I think that's and to be honest with you, been my experience that most black folks in this country are conservative, whether they wish to admit, but not to the extreme of what you see on the other side, you know?
Right.
And that's just been my you know, what I've observed, you know. And we will come out and do what's in our interest when it comes time to do that. And we certainly cannot afford to fall back now, since there's no Obama type personality or figure running for the presidency again. But you know, we have an opportunity. I'm sorry. What'd you say?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, the thing is, it's just that, you know, we're still on the threshold problems that would be so catastrophic for us in terms of the global situation, you know, that we cannot afford to sit back quietly and just let any old yahoo who talks a good game in front of the media to be elected as the next you know, executive for the government, and that's it. And you know, it's just scary, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is extremely scary, and what these individuals are promoting, you know, and
right,
the things that they're willing to go to. I mean, still with these tragedies happening in the United States with gun violence, you still have individuals towing the line against gun control. You know, Jeb Bush said something like, well, you know, stuff happens, you know, which, you know, I'm sure he didn't mean it as flip as it did, but it comes off flip, you know, when you
right.
say stuff happens, when somebody just had their people killed, you know. And it's just like the sheriff out there, he was anti-gun control. You know, I don't understand or know what is the problem with having someone having to wait a couple hours before they can get their big, powerful guns. And certainly I do understand, you know, the Second Amendment, I believe it was, right to bear arms or whatever, and we have to be diligent against, you know, a government run wild to citizens, whatever. But it ain't going to be guns that save us. Because, in reality, you know, if citizens need to take up arms against their own government, because you had some kind of Putin-type character or Assad-type
yeah.
character, it wouldn't be the guns that we'd have to worry about in terms of weaponry. So I understand that right to bear arms or whatnot, but, you know, in all reality, it'd be a lot worse that we'd have to worry about. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the Pope's visit here, and I'm sure you were aware of the news, Wayne, when the Kim Davis, the county clerk in Kentucky, had her lawyer come out and say that she had a meeting with the Pope, and the Pope told her to stay strong and was very supportive and this and that. And then a couple of days later, the Vatican came out with their version of the corrected version of the meeting.
Right.
And how ended up meeting the Pope. And, of course, true to form, and it's unfortunate that these people with these very conservative points of view and perspectives always seem to embellish. They always seem to make their point sound more important than it is. And you really have to kind of wonder how important, how valid their point is when they keep having to embellish and make up extra stuff about it. Because, you know, because the Vatican came out and said, no, he didn't have a private audience with Kim Davis. It wasn't all as special as she's making it sound. You know, she was one of many people that he met, this and that. But just the presentation of it by her attorney and her to get on the air, and he told me to stay strong and hug me and gave me a rosary. The Pope gives everybody rosaries that he needs.
Right, and he hugs as many people as he can.
So you know, here are these clowns, and they represent a certain ideology, and I think that they do a disservice to the ideology that they represent when they embellish and try to make themselves seem so much more important than they really are. And I think that they kind of really go in opposition of what they claim to be Christians and all of that. It seems like they go for the glory of being the one to stand up. It's really interesting how a lot of this stuff seems to come from a certain kind of a perspective about things.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. She knew full well what she was doing, and the thing is, I'm glad that the Vatican, you know, took its time to let the hoopla die down and then come out with their statement. This is part of a political agenda. You know, I don't know, it's already the law of the land with respect to, you know, the whole issue of people of same-sex marriage and all that business. And the fact that she feels that she could use her religious beliefs as a decision, I mean, to go against what the government has already approved of, that in itself speaks volumes about the state and the local government of which she's coming out of, you know? I mean, yeah, they did the thing, they did what was supposed to be done, but, you know, she's back on the job. Eric, if that had been one of us, we would have been expunged completely. There would have been no further discussion, you know? And that's the thing that I just find so baffling, that it's so apparent, it's so glaring. And the deal is that the media kept it under wraps for a long time about that supposed meeting, whether it was clandestine or it was just something that happened, you know, at the spur of the moment because of her proximity to the Pope at the time. You know, it's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is she figured that she would capitalize on it, and somehow somebody gave the impression there was an embargo about this meeting. And at least that was the way it was conveyed over the air. And then, you know, you hear a day later, oh, yeah, she met with the Pope, the Pope, them. You know, to me, that's all part of an agenda, you know, especially when it comes out that the Vatican had a completely different spin.
Well, yeah, it's part of an agenda to make their side and their point of view more important than it actually is. And, you know, it's interesting how these people like to pick and choose. You know, sometimes they'll be talking about the Constitution, right to bear arms, this and that. And other times they'll talk about, well, the Constitution is in conflict with the Bible, because the Constitution says separation of church and state. But you are a religious person, but you work for the state, so your religious views superseded your responsibilities and your duties as an employee of the state. But then there'll be other times that you want to talk about your constitutional right for you to have your religious beliefs. So which side, you know, they bounce back and forth, these people. It's like, well, which side do you want to play it? Because you
right,
know, one side you're going on the Constitution, the other time you're going on the Bible. You know, and then
Sometimes
these people are the same people who will say, well, the United States is a Christian nation because the Constitution is based on Christianity and law of the Bible. Now, you know, I mean, they begin to believe their own BS because they talk to each other. They
right.
talk to each other. They listen to their own shows that reinforce their opinions and attitudes. And these people are not willing to be open to anything at all. And so that's why after a minute, they sound pretty nutty. They sound nutty because they're sitting at home talking to themselves in a closed room, not wanting to answer the door when the mail comes, not wanting to turn on the news. When the news comes, and the news only goes to one channel. You know?
Right, that's it. Yeah,
and
that amazes me still.
And they want to hear people talking that craziness that they're talking. And it's unbelievable the lengths to which they're willing to go, regardless of the facts. These are people that don't want to be confused by the facts, you know? So what are you going to do? I mean, another issue, too, that I'm sure that you're aware of just most recently, that Alabama has decided to close a number of drivers' DMVs.
Right.
In a number of counties in the state of Alabama. And out of like 15 of the counties that are getting closures, 12 of them are predominantly black. And so this is a way that Alabama begins to erode one's ability to vote. Talking about this might be voter suppression because, you know, you get a state-issued ID, which is usually a driver's license, from the DMV. You use your driver's license as ID to go vote. If they close down all the DMVs that is in the black counties, then people got to drive all the way across town to get a driver's license. Even though the guy was on Chris Hayes last night, the attorney general of that state, and he says, "Well, you know, we got state offices where people can go and get state issued ID." Yeah, but what's a state issued ID? If you're going to take the day off of work to get a state issued ID, or take a few minutes, you might as well get a driver's license, something that can really do something for you because you need to drive. So
exactly.
And this is after, you know, the Supreme Court decision about pre-clearance. Some of these particular states having to get pre-cleared before they change certain laws that affect voter rights. And here, Alabama is doing the exact thing that we thought they would do when this decision came down by this conservative Supreme Court, who, by the way, the Republicans were dogging out when they just recently made a decision that they didn't like. Mike Huckabee, I think, was the guy who was talking about these individuals, they're not supreme, they're this, they're that. But then when it comes to other rights, when it comes to down on their side, they want to talk about the Supreme Court. So, you know, it's really kind of funny what these people are willing to do, the lengths they're willing to go through. I mean, they kind of lose their mind because they become criminals that just are obvious, kleptomania, they're doing stuff in front of people, man, and they don't care anymore. I mean, Alabama's situation is really unbelievable, and they really expect people not to believe by a Republican legislature that this is not an attempt to cut back on the voting rights of black people. All of those candidates went for Barack Obama, and now they come back with this closing majority of all of except for two counties, two black counties. All the other ones, the DM, Division of Motor Vehicles, have been closed.
They said it was directly affecting the black belt down there. I mean, you know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, they feel that they could legally get away with it. And if we don't stand up and angst and protest, they may just get away with it. I mean, I remember back in the day, people like the Reverend Jesse Jackson and a number of activists out there were very, very active in trying to turn that equation around by having voter registration drives, by having them sign up at the motor vehicles to make it easier and stuff like that. And, you know, somebody has creatively come up and probably used money as an issue to just suddenly stop this. And thinking that, you know, going to some state office is going to make a difference. And, again, we cannot afford to allow past successes suddenly be like something that we should just trivialize if we're being threatened again, you know?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I mean, it just amazes me what goes on.
Well, and really the crazy thing about it is that these people will reattack the issues. You know, part of the thing, I think what we do is that we fight one battle, and we win that battle, and we kind of move on. Okay, that battle's fought,
right.
Move on to the next battle. What's happening is with the opposition, they're circling it back around to attack those accomplishments that we've made to dismantle them, which is what they're trying to do with Obamacare. Because I remember as well, too, the whole push that Jesse Jackson did, the whole voter registration, come out and vote. You know, people weren't really paying too much attention until that became the whole fad. Jeff was spearleading that. Got the same-day voter registration to go through in certain places. You know, that was a big push. And that's been cut out, you know, in certain states. You can't do same-day voter registration. You know,
they cut out
states that the churches can't encourage their parishioners to go vote. You know, so what they do, they circle back around. They're descendants of the next generation. They pass off the playbook to the next crew.
Right.
And then that crew circles back around to try and dismantle the accomplishments that have already been made, and there's battles that are fought. So we have to fight them over again. And the only way to beat that is to have more people being able to be involved in the process, you know? And that's
seems to be the answer, yeah, you know. And we need to be really informed. I mean, I think that's really the problem. And as long as we don't have those outlets in which to tune into, you know, we're going to remain in a vacuum, you know? And until something directly affects you and you see the importance of actually doing something, you know, people are just and particularly our folks, and it's basically been documented that there are times when we'll just sit back and just look at the whole elective office process. It's just something that you know, should be ignored, because no matter who gets in there, there's always some agenda that's worked against us. But I firmly believe that if we protest and if we act and if we do cast ballots, you know, on the times that we have to, and analyze the political landscape, you know, we would be far more effective as a voting bloc, and it would just point to how astute we are as a people.
Yeah, I agree, and we have to. That's something we have to do within our own community, because you're not going to get it from the larger community for the masses of people to be active. The larger community thrives on the status quo. You know, everybody going with the status quo. Don't really shake up things too tough. Because if you look at something like just MSNBC and their most recent shakeup, so to speak, of their daily lineup of shows, they had The Edge Show, which was canceled. Alex, which was canceled. Reverend Al, which was canceled or moved to Sunday mornings at 8 a.m., which means basically you're canceled or we're trying to get rid of you, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. And so, I mean, to me, I was looking at, you know, at least Reverend Al was giving us a black perspective of the news that I found, to a certain degree, valuable. Ed was given a very progressive perspective of the news that I found even more progressive than some of the other voices that I found to be valuable. And in one swoop, this news channel changes their lineup. So therefore, the type of news that we're able to get, the information we're able to get, is changed. And you know, part of being free and living in a free society is that you have to go to the sources to seek information. And if you just sit there and wait for the information to come to you, or wait for information that's spoon-fed to you by these networks, by these places, then you're never going to get the full story. You're just going to get how they frame the argument and how they frame the story. And from what a perspective...
And you're absolutely right about framing, because it's the way a story is told and framed what basically tells, you know, who's getting something objective, or you're getting somebody's bias, latent opinion.
Right. It's like when they ask a certain question. How a question is asked determines on the perspective that the people listen to the question. If you watch the reporter Major Garrett, who's that conservative reporter who's a White House correspondent for whatever network he is, but he always...
He's with CBS now, yeah.
He's with CBS, used to be with Fox, which I thought that that was just a job until you hear him ask these questions to the president, like, are you ashamed that you didn't act sooner, that this and that? And just the framing of a question like that Are you ashamed that you didn't act sooner and that this policy? And really asking questions that are quite editorialized, and that sets up the parameters within which the question is perceived and within what the person has done. So therefore, he's already created a negative aspect of how the president, his whole vibe about some of his decisions have been brought about. So people have to be smart enough and astute enough to understand that this person is asking a loaded question, or this person is editorializing things. And the average person is not very astute. I mean, we have news that's only out for 30 minutes a day, when complex issues need to be hashed out for a lot longer than that. And people seem not to have a problem with, you know, just a little dose of it, you know, because these cats are working every day, all day long. The closer I've had to pay attention to politics as of recently, these cats are working every day, and there's always ways that can be done that can affect the daily lives of Americans that politicians are doing, that people that are running the government are doing, either through their work in these committees, their work in these hearings, or what they decide to vote on Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently averting another government shutdown that these guys want to do behind Planned Parenthood. So, you know, these are things that go on every day. The average American doesn't see that, but these things go on every day, and they affect our lives. And it behooves you to be aware of information that affects your life, because then you can take advantage of that information, or then you could be prepared about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I'm so glad when you mentioned the Major Garrett situation. Remember a few weeks ago, I think Obama, one of his last news conferences in the White House press room, he took him to task because the manner in which he asked the question was so loaded and so biased, you know, that he called him out on it. We need more people who are willing to see that and just not go with the flow and just, you know. But Obama is a completely different character, you know. I don't know if the average elected individual would do that. I think the question has something to do with Syria and the evacuation of all these people who are caught up in the political conflict with Assad there and ISIS. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, they'll do anything to just bring this man down in the waning months of his presidency. But, you know, hopefully if he stays the course, and I'm just waiting to see what's going to happen with regard to the Democratic ticket now, particularly with talk of Biden getting in there, you know, what will happen in terms of the contest. But I don't think we're at a point where this country could afford to embrace some of the values that are being promoted by many of the Republican candidates, period.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're promoting such a closed society. I mean, you have individuals that are of other ethnic groups that are promoting really extreme things. And they say extreme. Bobby Jindal said something that was really crazy the other day, which escapes me. But for a gentleman who's of East Indian descent, I would assume, and just some of his comments and some of the ways he comes across. I don't mean to mention ethnicity, but I think that certain individuals want to negate the perspective or the effect of racial animosity in this country, to say the least. And individuals of color who get to certain elected positions by, like I said, fitting in and proving themselves or whatever, don't really want to rock the boat by talking about those issues that separate us, or those issues that one's group, ethnic group, finds discriminatory. And I mentioned Bobby Jindal because I've heard him say some really kind of real conservative things in a vacuum, not considering that, you know, some of the people that are going to be affected by some of your comments, or some of your comments sound really anti some people that look very similar to you, and really kind of very kind of callous to people that look similar to you. And it's just really what you have to give up, you know. You have to give up your individuality, your ethnicity, to be in certain clubs in America. Clearly you do. Clearly there are certain individuals that are willing to do that. But why should you have to do that? Why should anybody? I mean, we're all humans on this earth, so that should be enough. But apparently that's not enough for certain people. And there's just something that in America that's really thick in terms of how different people are treated. Lastly, before we go, we got about 5 minutes, but they're doing this documentary on MSNBC about called Bloodlines. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is kind of this is an offshoot of the story about the doctor that killed that beloved mascot lion in Africa.
Right. I remember that story.
Which is coming on tonight on MSNBC, I think. And it's about a documentary about these people that breed lions to be hunted down and killed for these fake hunters who want to kill a big game animal. And these lions are actually bred by humans, so they're kind of in captivity, almost domesticated. You know, they're not in the wild.
Right.
And what happens is that these cats pay this service to come, and I don't even think they hunt them. They just shoot them in a cage or something crazy like that. And they pay all this exorbitant amount of money to go here and kill these lions, and then they can come back home and lie to people and tell them they were out on a safari and killed the lion. And it's a documentary that's being done tonight, I believe, on NBC. It's going to be shown. But it's just a real sick thing that some people want to go through. And why some people
not to cut you off again, but there was so much uproar behind his killing that lion that it's amazing that, you know, after all this time he's managed to resurface. I don't know what his practice is like now, but clearly, you know, there was enough uproar that it had an impact on his business, rightfully so.
Yeah, people were protesting in front of his practice and things like that. You know, all this crazy stuff that we talk about, politics, and individuals doing things like this, wanting to kill animals for sport. You know, I don't know where PETA is and all these other things, but these are people that need to be treated in our society like, you know, you're a pariah. You're going to hunt down an animal. I mean, at least that guy thought he was in a hunt or something like that. These guys, they're paying the service to go, and I don't even think that, like I said, I think it's kind of like a closed place where they go and shoot the lions, from what I'm understanding. And you really need to be rejected by society when you do these things. You know, if people know who you are, then you should be treated that way. You should be treated in a way that lets you know your behavior is unacceptable. We're running out of time, but it's just like these individuals, and this is a similar mentality to these people, these pharmaceutical companies that want to charge all this money for these drugs that people depend on to stay alive. And these individuals, you know, they usually don't show pictures of some of these CEOs. I was watching the news story tonight. They showed a picture of a CEO of a company that's charging for this one particular drug that these people need to stay alive, that they have to take the rest of their life. It costs about $300,000 annually. So that I just wanted to leave that with the person. And they said the CEO got a $29 million bonus. So there's got to be some kind of middle ground, like how much money you guys can make as opposed to telling somebody, pay me or die. I have the antidote, give me all your earthly possessions. That's basically what they're saying. 1 minute, Wayne, go ahead. You'll wrap up.
No, I was just going to – I happen to agree with you. The only thing I would say is that I think at some point we're going to have to adapt – to the same kind of medical establishment and practices that they have in Canada and France and all these countries where, you know, the doctors get it. It's about treating people, and it's not about, you know, an invitation to become a multimillionaire the minute you have the letters MD behind your name, you know?
Right.
And in fact, I even think MD means $1 million. The minute you get that, you're guaranteed to get $1 million, you know? Never mind what it does to people, you know, so what you do to people. I don't know. I mean, we could devote another hour on what's going on with the whole healthcare system here.
We're going to have to put a button in it, Wayne. We got 10 seconds.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Wade Gilman, for tuning in.
I'm
Eric Kane. This has been the K Thompson Live Show. Tune us again next week on the K Thompson Live Show. Always, you can hear us at 8 p.m., 8 to 9 p.m. on here on the Blog Talk Radio Network / K Thompson Live. Thanks for calling in. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Good. All right.
Thank you.